Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've reached the end of the week. Happy Friday, everyone. Jim and I agree on the first martini today, but we're in a little bit of a different perspective on why it's the good martini. We go to the speculation that was all over Rush Limbaugh yesterday, Drudge Report last night, and still there today, about Condoleezza Rice, former National Security Advisor, former Secretary of State in the Bush administration, being apparently on the short list for Mitt Romney's vice presidential selection list. Later on, through reporting actually by National Review's Bob Costa, it appears that that's not actually true, but it's decent speculation, which is and good for the grist mill, which Jim will talk about in a moment. I just hope it's not true, Jim. As much as I respect Dr. Rice, the fact that she's probably more associated with the Bush administration than anyone else will not endear her or the ticket to independents, who we need to win over, as well as shore up the base, because she's pro-choice, and that means there's a lot of people in the conservative base who would be very reluctant to support this ticket. They were not crazy about Romney in the first place, and that wouldn't help. Then you're really relying on distrust and dislike of Obama to carry over that many millions of people. So hopefully Bob Costa's gotten the correct word from the Romney campaign, and this won't happen.
I myself would be one of those persons who thinks that, you know, Condi Rice is not going to be the running mate. A couple of things kind of give off an odor that this is a not even a trial balloon so much as a, you could say, chaff. This is a way for the Romney campaign to get everybody talking about what they want to talk about, as opposed to the inevitable, you know, Stephanie Cutter saying, he's a felon! Somebody arrest that man! He lied in federal forms for $100,000. The guy is worth millions of dollars, you know. It's almost a demonstration of force, you could say, by the Romney campaign, saying, here's how quickly we can shift the narrative when we need it to. I'm one of those guys who actually is probably not as negative on Condi Rice as a lot of other people. I mean, you definitely say, oh, now there's the Bush card. They'll be saying, here comes the Bush administration again. But I'm not sure how many people really would lay the fault of the Bush administration at the feet of Condi Rice. It's not like she was, you know, behind TARP or things like that. I suppose there's a certain argument to be said that, you know, she's been in the public eye, but she has not campaigned. She has not debated. She's never run for office before. And you can think, oh, I don't know if she's going to be very solid at that. On the other hand, this is somebody who has, you know, been Secretary of State, been National Security Advisor, been in the White House on 9/11, probably was very much seen firsthand what is required of a president. And I actually might argue that Condi Rice might be among the most prepared women in the country to be the president at a moment's notice. So just, I'm not totally outraged over her being on this. I don't think she'll be the pick for the flaws and problems we mentioned earlier. But again, I think this is fairly interesting to see how much it's an interesting name that you put out there and suddenly that everybody's got an opinion on. The reaction yesterday was that, well, why shouldn't Romney meet with, say, Cory Booker and really freak out Democrats? And I said, you know, if you think about it, he could do this periodically between now and selection time, meet with, you know, ask the CIA for permission to speak to David Petraeus. That would freak everybody out. There are all kinds of famous Americans who you might not really want to be vice president, but you could certainly get tongues wagging and create a great deal of excitement for. Now, if at the end of this process you end up with, say, Tim Pawlenty, maybe this isn't such a good idea. And I myself, even though I really like Tim Pawlenty, I think most people find he, Rob Portman, and a bunch of the other names kind of generic, kind of unexciting, and all that stuff. But I don't think Romney's going to look for a game changer or anything terribly dramatic or exciting. Look, any day that the Romney campaign could just, you know, with one little phone call to Drudge, set the news agenda, I think is a pretty interesting day. And I think it demonstrates a certain nimbleness on the part of the Romney campaign.
Mitt Romney, of course, does not have any shortage of issues to go after the president about. And the president has given him one more. We've seen the president, Jim, go to the executive order pen numerous times to do things that may or may not be constitutional. We saw it not that long ago, of course, on many different aspects of the DREAM Act. Now, it appears, according to the Heritage Foundation and others, that the president has decided to go through this strategy again to essentially shred the work requirements from the landmark welfare reform law of 1996. Then you say, well, how could that be possible? Because there is a law passed by Congress. You can't just go around and change that. Well, here's exactly how the Heritage Foundation explains how this is going to happen. The Obama administration issued a new directive stating that the traditional work requirements can be waived or overridden by a legal device called the Section 1115 waiver authority under the Social Security law. The only problem is that you can only waive directives in that section, which the work requirements are not in. So the Obama administration, if in fact they are doing this, is breaking the law. Big surprise, Jim.
You know, it says something about Obama that he would probably undo the one thing that Bill Clinton did that conservatives really think was a great accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we have to erase all things that Democrats did that made any Republican happy at all. It's frustrating. It's really dispiriting. Just as, you know, however many of our martinis are double-sided. Boy, you want to talk about an opportunity for the Romney campaign. That's a fight I'm willing to have, to refight the 1996 welfare reform law, which, by the way, at the time, Barack Obama was opposed to. And so I think there's a strong argument to be made that, look, Barack Obama doesn't really believe that you should need to work or be looking for work to qualify for government assistance. And I think that's a very basic part of the American social contract. Bill Clinton always said, whenever he was touting this policy, he said, look, people who work hard and play by the rules. And part of working hard and play by the rules is that, you know, Newt Gingrich talking about this during the primary campaign. It's kind of this fundamental belief of all Americans that jobs, any work, better to do that than to sit around and have other people support you. We are that opposed to the culture of dependency. We are that opposed to the notion that, you know, somebody else should take care of you. We recoil that strongly at the notion of the safety net being used as a hammock. And, you know, generational dependency on government assistance and things like that. Clearly, Barack Obama doesn't have that problem. Now, the argument's going to be, well, there aren't any jobs, so it's unfair to have work requirements. I fail to see how this is an argument for Obama.
Right.
Well, I mismanaged the economy so badly that it's really not fair to expect people to find work. You know, this is a high-hanging curve, Romney campaign. You can hit this one hard if you swing hard and swing correctly. So I would say, go for it.
Yeah, two things. You kind of mentioned the first thing, and that's that if the president is looking to make a welfare easier to stay on and probably add more people to it, that's not exactly an argument that his stewardship of the economy is going to get any better in the next 4 years. And secondly, just as an aside, Jim, I like the fact that you now instinctively use the words Newt Gingrich and fundamental in the same sentence without even realizing it.
Fundamentally, profoundly, frankly, Obama's position is stupid, because, you know, stupid is the other, you know, one of Newt's other favorite words. That and Churchillian. We're like Charlemagne.
So the president, of course, as a result of this effort and many others, clearly has no good idea, good handle on the economy, what it's going to take to really bring this nation back. So you would think that that would be one of his biggest regrets, biggest failures in the first 4 years. No. He's gotten the policies right, Jim. He'll just tell you that right flat out. The problem is he doesn't talk enough about himself, or he doesn't talk enough about how this is going to impact the American people. He's not doing enough storytelling. Here's the president explaining to Charlie Rose of CBS what his biggest mistake was early on in his administration.
The mistake of my first couple of years was thinking that this job was just about getting the policy right. And that's important. But, you know, the nature of this office is also to tell a story to the American people that gives them a sense of unity and purpose and optimism, especially during tough times. It's funny, when I ran, everybody said, well, you can give a great speech, but can he actually, you know, manage the job? And then my first 2 years, I think the notion was, well, you know, he's been juggling and managing a lot of stuff, but, you know, where's the story that tells us where he's going? And I think that was a legitimate criticism.
I wish you all could see the video if you haven't. The president constantly looking at the floor, obviously stuttering and stammering there because he's clearly feeding Charlie Rose and the rest of us a load of bull there. Jim, apparently the biggest problem is that the people think the president has done a fabulous job of managing and with policy. No criticism there whatsoever. He just doesn't talk enough.
You know, I'm going to give President Obama a molecule of sympathy, because the question is, what is your biggest mistake? And President George W. Bush got this a lot during both his 2004 re-election campaign and towards the end of his presidency. Whether or not the interviewer has the best of intentions, if you say, boy, I really messed up on policy X, then that quote is going to be used against you for the rest of your life. You know, this will be, you know, hurled at you. So we have a culture that does not foster admissions against interest and you know, brutal honesty to the electorate in circumstances like this. And it was kind of funny that during the, you know, Democratic debates of 2008, people would ask, you know, what's your worst flaw to President Obama? And he actually would say, you know, sometimes I can be disorganized. I'm always losing things, like jobs. And he would say something like that. And that's, you know, apparently according to Obama's staff, he is, you know, back when he, you know, carried papers around and stuff, he was always looking for pens and things like that. A fairly minor flaw, but, you know, it seems like a very honest answer. And then they'd go to Hillary Clinton, and Hillary Clinton and John Edwards would always say, I think I just try too hard. I think I just care too much. You know, it was all, my flaw is actually this fantastic strength, and, you know. And after a while, Obama started making fun of them. So it was one of the few moments of life I've actually kind of, you know, felt a certain sympathy to Obama, where he gives a genuine answer, and everybody else gives the typical politician answer of, well, my biggest weakness is actually something that's fabulous about me, and another reason to vote, you know, vote for me. But having said that, if Barack Obama looks at his presidency and really thinks the biggest problem is he didn't tell enough story, I'm going to quote my friend Cam Edwards, who upon hearing this last night is like, well, he was stammering and you know, incoherently, he hasn't told his story enough? This is the man who wrote two autobiographies, one by the time he was age 36, okay? He won a Grammy for reading his story aloud. He's the subject of documentaries and biographies. Everything short of a Broadway musical has told the story of President Obama. And now, of course, we've got that fabulous movie starring Charles S. Dutton coming out. The story of Obama has been told. The problem is not the story. Perhaps the problem is the nonfiction story, Greg. Fiction story sounds fantastic. Oh, you know, he descended from the heavens into the Oval Office and, you know, Nirvana, you know, sprung forth from his executive auto pen. And, you know, yeah. No, the problem is that jobs haven't been created. I saw the headline, the housing market has recovered, and that's going to be news to a lot of homeowners. Cost of gasoline is still pretty high historically, even though it's down a bunch in the last couple of months. A lot of people working part-time when they want to work full-time. A lot of people kind of gone without promotions, rate. I mean, it's been a crappy economy for 4 years. And so what's his biggest failure? For Pete's sake, Mr. President, why do you think he got elected in 2008? It wasn't your, you know, I actually wouldn't say it wasn't even the Kumbaya speeches and all that stuff. It was people felt like we were in an economic crisis and, you know, ended up having no faith in John McCain after he kept saying, oh, we can't, got to cancel the debates. And 2 days later said, oh, no, we have to have the debates. Precisely when Democrats had been saying that John McCain is erratic. I think the fact that Obama can't even acknowledge circumstances is, again, good, you know, potentially good news for Mitt Romney, because I think there's a very strong message that, look, you can't solve a problem if you don't see it. If you refuse to acknowledge that the economy is still in, you know, really lousy shape, there is no chance that you will improve it, you know, that your policies will improve it.
Just to set the record straight, John Edwards did try too hard in 2008. He was just focused on the wrong things. Jim, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
All right, looking forward to it, Greg. See you.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a great weekend, everyone, and check back in with us on Monday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.